Chapter 6, July 1817. It was with joy that Secundus read Mrs. Strange's letter. So much joy, in fact, that he read it another three times to himself, and then another twice out loud to Mr. Honeyfoot. "Oh, how splendid!" Mr. Honeyfoot cried. "It will be so wonderful to see her again and Lady Pole." For in Mrs. Strange's letter was an invitation for both gentlemen to join them at the Wintertown estate in Northamptonshire. He penned a reply, an enthusiastic acceptance of the invitation, tempered only by the guilt of putting on hold all the work around him. The ladies would understand, Mr. Honeyfoot pointed out, so in his reply Secundus accepted, but expressed his regret that they would be unable to stay more than three nights. Calculating in the time for the journey, it was the most he knew he could spare, all he felt able to leave under the capable supervision of Charles and Mrs. White. Mr. Honeyfoot looked over the letter, declared himself delighted with the contents, and travelled back to York in eagerness to tell his wife the news. Once he had addressed and sealed the letter, Secundus looked at it for some minutes. He set it aside, picked up a fresh sheet of paper, and dipped his pen. Once more he set out the dates of his visit, but this time addressed the letter to the inn in Salisbury at which he knew Childermas would be staying until the end of the week. He would hate to think of Childermas turning up at Staircross to find no one to receive him, to think himself unwelcome, much as he knew Charles and Mrs. White would take good care of him. He picked up the sealing wax, paused, unfolded the letter to add an impulsive postscript, suggesting that if Childermas happened to be passing through Northamptonshire around the dates indicated, he would undoubtedly be welcome. The ladies would certainly be glad to see him, Secundus thought, instrumental as he had been in the restoration of Lady Pole. It was a few days before he received Childermas's reply, wishing him a happy visit, and expressing some disbelief in Secundus's certainty in the happiness of Mrs. Strange and Lady Pole in seeing Childermas. Neither lady had ever held any great love for Mr. Norrell, he pointed out, and reminded Secundus how much Mr. Norrell's man Childermas had once been, perhaps still was. Something about the curl of the letters on the page, the phrasing of it, made Secundus hear the twitch of a smile in Childermas's voice, the huff of a laugh. It was not, he knew, a rebuke. He smiled as he read it, disappointed though he was, and thought of Mrs. Strange's previous letter, and how she had said that Childermas sounded a much reformed character, and knew Childermas was likely correct. The journey was a long one, over 150 miles. The weather was unseasonably cold, but largely dry, the roads remaining thankfully passable. Mr. Honeyfoot was, as always, a jolly companion, and they spent the journey alternately discussing magic, Staircross's preparations, the Honeyfoot family — Catherine was expecting her first child, with Mr. and Mrs. Honeyfoot eagerly awaiting the arrival — and quietly reading when the light was good enough. It was late afternoon on the third day by the time they arrived at the Wintertown house, great heavy clouds massing on the western horizon. As the carriage drew up to the door, Mrs. Strange and Lady Pole came out to greet them. As they climbed down from the carriage, a great smile broke out on Mrs. Strange's face. "Mr. Secundus, Mr. Honeyfoot, how wonderful to meet with old friends and see them so little changed." She rushed forward and took both Secundus's hands in hers and pressed them warmly. "It seems that Italy has agreed with you, madam," said Secundus, "but we are very glad to have you back in England." She laughed and turned to give the same attention to Mr. Honeyfoot. Lady Pole did not rush forward to embrace them, but stood watching with her shawl tied about her shoulders. "My lady," Secundus said, stepping forward out of the way of Mrs. Strange and Mr. Honeyfoot and offering her a bow. "You look much recovered. I trust the travel has done you some good?" After being so long sequestered in one place or another, he wished to add, but looking at her, he dared not. He did not need to. Lady Pole gave him a tight smile and a shallow nod. She was much changed since he had last seen her in February. The dark circles under her eyes, which he had never seen her without, had faded, and although her complexion was still pale, it no longer held the sick pallor of her long confinement, first at Harley Street, then at Staircross. Her eyes, however, still held a haunted look, and now that he saw them together, he saw the same shadow in Mrs. Strange's eyes. "Come, come," Mrs. Strange ushered them into the house, and Secundus was in no doubt of whose idea their invitation had been. "We must get you settled, and then some tea. You'll want to freshen up after your journey, no doubt." Now that he was alert to the difference in her eyes, the cheer in her voice fell flat. It was not false, not invented, but exaggerated, as if she were aware of the change in herself and was trying to make it up. It was subtle enough that Mr. Honeyfoot seemed unaware of it, but Mr. Honeyfoot had not visited the Stranges as often as Mr. Secundus, did not know her usual tone so well. They were shown to their rooms by liveried footmen. Mr. Segundus quietly hoped that Mrs. Lennox would not expect the staff at Staircross to wear such fine uniform. He dreaded to think of what the waistcoats alone would cost. And they refreshed themselves. Segundus washed his face, he felt dusty from the journey, even within the carriage, and wondered how Davy felt, and changed into something slightly less rumpled. When he made his way downstairs, he found that Mr. Honeyfoot had preceded him, and that there was a larger party gathered than he had anticipated. For, as the footman introduced him to the drawing-room, one of three, Segundus had learned from the man as he was guided from his room, this being the green drawing-room, he saw that as well as his three friends, there were also a lady and a gentleman, both approaching the outside of middle age, and a young woman, who looked up in interest as Segundus came in. There was something familiar about them, something that scratched at the back of his mind like a mouse behind skirting. These persons Mrs. Strange introduced as the Graysteels, Dr. Graysteel, his sister Miss Graysteel, and his daughter Miss Flora. In a moment, Segundus remembered where he had seen them, tiny figures shimmering in a silver basin with something warmer than the Yorkshire February light. He found he liked them immensely upon their first introduction. Flora was a delightful young woman, bright and intelligent, and unafraid to make her own opinions known, and both Doctor and Aunt Graysteel were solid, no-nonsense people. Tea was served by Lady Pole, and a deal of conversation followed. Mr. Honeyfoot immediately won over the elder Graysteels with his good-natured interrogation of their many travels and with his enthusiastic descriptions of his own family, particularly Catherine's recent marriage and the imminent arrival of their third grandchild. "Ah, yes, my Jane is about ages with Miss Flora. They would get on splendidly, I think," Segundus heard Mr. Honeyfoot say. "I think I've heard you mention, miss, and you must forgive me if I'm wrong, as my ears do grow bad, that you have an interest in magic." And with Flora's assent that she did indeed, Mr. Honeyfoot was off, asking which particular areas interested her, explaining that Jane was now taking an interest in the subject, telling her of Miss Redruth of the York Society, and Flora was responding with equal vigor, while her father and aunt looked on in bemusement. Segundus sat back, happy to see his friend enjoying himself. He was, however, aware of a tightening of Lady Pole's mouth, a stiffening in her posture, as the conversation turned to magic. "It must be a great relief to be at home, my lady," he asked, wishing to distract her from her distress. She looked at him steadily, and he wished suddenly that he was alone with her and Mrs. Strange, that they may discuss whatever lurked behind their eyes. "I remember you speaking fondly of Great Hitherden." "It is," she said, her eyes traveling to the window. He followed her gaze and admired the view over the gentle green swell of the countryside. It was a warmer, mellower country than Staircross occupied. Farmland and hedgerows and undulating waves of summer meadows. It was a similar scene to the one he had known as a child, and it brought a sense of bittersweet warmth to him even as the heavens opened and battered the lush greenery. Yet there was part of him, somewhere hidden behind his ribs, that missed the sharpness of the moor around Staircross in summer with a sudden pang. The bell heather had just been starting to flower when he had left, and he found he longed for the saturation and clarity that came with the cold northern light. As pleasant as this view was, he missed the rough edges of the north for all its bleakness, the bare scrape of rock against the bright burst of heather, of course. This place was domesticated in a way the north could never be, and he found he had developed a taste for a certain wildness. "London is too full of people," Lady Pole continued. Segundus blinked himself back into the room and back to the conversation. "I could not. After such travel, I felt in need of some seclusion." He knew enough of her experience under the fairy's enchantment to understand, and looked to Mrs. Strange in time to see the frown pass across her brow, the flex of her jaw. "It must be a great balm to you, Mrs. Strange," he said, "to have the comfort of your friend's presence, and also to have your brother so close at hand. Does he visit often?" Mrs. Strange turned upon him a smile which reflected something more like her old good humor, and gave a light laugh. "Indeed, for the first few weeks after our return, I think Emma feared he might never leave." She turned her smile to her friend, and for the briefest moment a grave look flickered over her face like the shadow of a passing bird. "But it is cheering to know he is so near. I hope he and Mrs. Woodhope will visit tomorrow." "I look forward to seeing him again," Segundus said. "I hope I will not prove such a bore this time," he added with a smile, and was pleased when Mrs. Strange laughed. "Oh, but Mr. Segundus, you must fill me in on all that has happened," she exclaimed. "I'm sure your letters have not contained half of the things that have been going on, and that I missed while I was gone from England. Emma has filled me in on what she knows, which is obviously limited by her circumstances, but she has spoken so highly of your care, sir, as have the Greysteels, but all of them have been absent from England in one way or another for so long, and so much has happened these last months. Henry has told me some, but he has been caught up so much in parish affairs. Oh, I'm afraid I do not think I will be as informative as you hope, he laughed. I was quite taken up with Lady Pole's care while she was at Staircross, which was the better part of your absence, and since then my focus has been rather single-minded on the school. Despite his objections, he tried to condense the goings-on of the last year and a half, with helpful interjections by Mr. Honeyfoot and Dr. Greysteel, who had religiously kept up with the English papers while abroad. He was more reliable on the past 6 months, and talked to them of Vinculus, whom the Greysteels were at once horrified and captivated by, and Childermas's attempts to read the letters upon his skin, of the chaos the government had been plunged into following the return of magic, of Segundus's own attempts to help the situation while making the efforts to transform Staircross into the school he had always wished it to be. The conversation continued in a lively way all through dinner and back into the drawing room. Dr. Greysteel entertained them with his stories of his time at sea, Miss Flora gave charming accounts of the places they had visited and the history of them, and as she spoke, he recognized the young woman Jonathan Strange had written so highly of. Lady Pole discussed the commotion in Parliament she had heard of from Sir Walter, how Norrell's man hardly seemed to be away from the place, and was, to Sir Walter's amusement, becoming a very stubborn stone in the government's shoe. For his own part, Segundus tried to keep his own conversation away from magic, unless he was speaking only to Mr. Honeyfoot or Miss Flora, but as the company was so mixed and cheerful, he managed without difficulty. By the time the clocks chimed 11 and the party had been stifling yawns for at least an hour, Mr. Honeyfoot had quite drifted to sleep in his chair around 9:30, and none had had the heart to wake him. The Greysteels decided to retire. They shook Mr. Honeyfoot awake, and they all four said their goodnights. Lady Pole, who had been quiet for much of the evening, gave a heavy sigh and rose to her feet. "I will take my leave also," she said, "but I can see you have more you wish to discuss, Arabella." "I will not be too late, my dear," Mrs. Strange answered, catching Lady Pole's hand as she passed. "I will try not to wake you." The two ladies exchanged wry smiles, and Lady Pole left the room. "Oh," Segundus cried, "I hope you are not sharing a room because we have pushed you from your own. Mr. Honeyfoot and I are quite used to sharing. In fact, we have done so at every inn on our journey, and would happily do so here if it gave you more comfort." "It is not that, but thank you," Mrs. Strange sighed, smiling kindly at him. "There is room enough here. It is rather that, after our enchantments, we each find it a comfort to share a bed." She was silent a moment, and then looked at him with her dark eyes glittering in the candlelight. "We both suffer rather badly from nightmares, Mr. Segundus." She said it in such a matter-of-fact manner that Segundus thought she could have been describing the weather rather than the ill after-effects of being held captive by fairies. "It is a comfort to both of us that someone is there, either to wake us from them or to share them with after." "I am sorry to hear that, Mrs. Strange." She gave him a sad kind of smile and took his hand gently in hers, reaching between their chairs. "Do call me Arabella, John." One corner of her mouth curved up a little higher. "You are such a good friend to Jonathan, and I hope that friendship will extend to me." "Of course." He returned her smile, felt the melancholy tug of it in his cheeks. "I did not want to seem presumptuous, particularly not in front of your companions." This made her laugh. "You will find that we are all three rather modern young women, although the elder Greysteels are a little more reserved in nature, I can admit." They laughed a little together, and sipped at the port which had been brought up to them by a different, finely liveried footman. Segundus felt something in him unwind. He let his legs stretch out towards the fire, and settled himself more comfortably in his chair, certain that she would not mind a slouch in his posture. He found his mind drifting, thinking of what she had told him of her enchantment, comparing it to Lady Pole's account in February. This naturally set him to thinking about the other occurrences of February, the disappearance of Hurtfew among them. "He visited me in Padua," Arabella said, when they had been silent for a few minutes, each of them staring into the fire in their own private reverie. He looked at her profile, lit by the warm glow of the fire as she gazed into the flames. "He doesn't know where they are, but Hurtfew travels with them, it seems." "Did he mention the other houses? Ashfair and Soho Square and Hanover Square? I suppose you've heard that they have also vanished." She gave a small shrug. "I have heard now, but had not at the time. Jonathan did not mention it, so I do not think he could have been aware." The same grave expression that had flickered so quickly across her countenance earlier settled more firmly, and she turned to him. Henry has told me that Norrell changed and published Jonathan's letters to him. Hateful little man. This last was fairly snarled, and her knuckles turned wide around her glass. She turned to him, her eyes blazing. We shall have to do something about that, John. I hope you will help me in that endeavor. Henry has told me he wishes to clear Jonathan's name. You have published. You have the connections to make the refutations. Will you help? Of course I shall. He squeezed her hand, noticed how small and pale hers was in his. I will do everything in my power. She nodded. We will discuss it with Henry tomorrow, if he makes it through this infernal rain. I would be happy to, he said, seeing the true reason for the invitation. I have been thinking, in fact, of writing about Jonathan, of his work and his deeds in the war. There needs to be some balance to Norrell's book. He looked at her. She met his eyes with a sharp gaze, keen and penetrating, but interested. If you would approve such work, of course. I would not only approve such a book, I would welcome it wholeheartedly, and trust you most of all with the task. There was a glimmer in her eye which hadn't been there a moment before, but she smiled at him warmly. Thank you, John, truly. You are the best man I know. They lapsed into a different silence this time, and Segundus thought of Jonathan Strange, could see Arabella did too. If he closed his eyes, it almost felt like one of the moments they had shared during his visits to Soho Square, the frequent times when Strange had been called away by some urgent call from the government. They had talked more then. Arabella had laughed more often and more brightly. The moments of quiet had always passed comfortably, despite the aura of magic that Cepheus the House, scratching at the back of Segundus's neck, rumbling low in his ears like thunder too far away to hear but close enough to feel. The moment held like a soap bubble, trembling and translucent, until it burst with Arabella's voice. I notice, she said, regarding him carefully, that Mr. Childermas features heavily in your stories. She paused for a moment, glanced at the fire, looked back at him. Are you certain he can be trusted? I would trust him with my life, Segundus said, realizing, as he said it, that it was true, that he had already. I know his sister, he wanted to say, but it would break a trust, and to Arabella would mean little. He is no longer Norrell's man, and his main goal is to see the success of English magic. That was also Norrell's goal, and look where that got us. Segundus gave her a wry smile. Childermas has a different way of going about things. I cannot explain it, but I know it is true. He has proven himself to me time and again, and although I understand your wariness, I beg you give him a chance. The smile she turned on him was warm, and she squeezed his hand once more. I trust your judgment, John. Your husband offered him an apprenticeship, you know, he asked, and she raised an eyebrow. When you were presumed dead, before he went to the continent. They were discussing Jonathan's book. Mr. Childermas is quite the practical magician, you know. He was, even then. And Jonathan offered to make him his student if he left Norrell's service. I did not know, she said, and narrowed her eyes at the fire and thought. I will give him the benefit of the doubt. He yawned deeply, and she laughed. I am afraid I have kept you up, John. I forget it has become a peculiarity of mine to become more active at night. I suppose it is why Emma and I make such well-suited bedfellows. But you must retire. I can see the exhaustion under your eyes. You have had such a long journey. It has been most delightful talking so, Arabella. He stood and bowed to her, then offered his arm. Let me walk you to your room. I would not like to lose my good reputation as a gentleman. She laughed lightly and stood, slipping her arm into his. I do not think you are much in danger of that, Mr. Segundus. I believe your reputation is beyond reproach. He wished he had her certainty.